You're listening to Alcoholics Alive, where recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous share their experience on how they live AA as a way of life. None of our participants get paid or speak for AA. Here are your hosts, Shank and Wayne. Shank, ever since we had Carmack on last week, I have used spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection, quite a few times.
Perfect. So
I appreciate you straightening us out on that.
Someone's got to do it.
I know. So if you're out there and you're listening to Meeting Shrapnel, again, we need to remind you that we went in heavy the first episode of season 6 and actually kept a modified version of Progress Not Perfection. So start using it. Shank turned it into Spiritual Progress Not Spiritual Perfection, but it's actually straight out of the big book.
There you go. Can't go wrong with the book.
No, you can't. You can't. I wonder if they're going to translate that in the plain language book to something else. Probably. All right, let's get right to our guest today. This is a repeat offender, but he's been on a previous episode. Good friend of ours, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Good to see y'all.
Yep. Good to see you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm Drew, alcoholic. Sobriety date's March 20th of 2016. And I was my last drink was in an airport bar. I was currently AWOL at the time. Decided I wasn't going to show up for work on Monday. And so I missed my flight and wound up at the airport bar just trying to fend off the scaries and try to figure out my life. And it was some beer, not a good one. And it was on the flight back and showed up to work the next day and honestly thought that I could dodge, you know, one more bullet and keep on lying to people and lying to my employer, my commander in the military. And it didn't work out so well. they told me to go do some task. I came back and my company commander, hospital commander, were all sitting there waiting for me when I got back and basically said, "Hey, what's going on? You know, you're acting crazy. Yeah, you are AWOL currently. And because of that, you have a decision to make. You can either go to federal prison or try to get some help." And I remember thinking there for a second, that's like, let me think about that. Is that how long am I going to be in that federal prison? Because there's just no way that I can stop drinking. There's no way I can put down the bottle. And you know, from there they threw everything at me. Basically told me in the end to go to AA, wound up in my first meeting, and still sober today. So yeah, it's good to be here.
It's always, you hear a lot of people say that they actually weigh those decisions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jail, help, prison, or help. Be a pretty clear decision for me, I would think. But anyway.
You'd go to prison? Yeah.
Well, no, probably not. You never know, though. Drew, we thank you for that intro. We're glad you're here with us today. Shank, what's our topic?
Our topic today, surprise, is AA in the military. And there is a Grapevine book this season. We're taking our topics from the Grapevine books. So there is one that is called AA in the Military, which is a collection of stories previously published in Grapevine by members of Alcoholics Anonymous who have served in the military. The book begins with letters from the troops during World War II, when Grapevine first became a vital tool in keeping soldiers sober and connected to AA. So there's also selection of stories by sober veteran members titled Coming Home. So there you go. That is where our title comes from today.
Okay. Well, you got two ex-members of the military on with you,
I
Shane. So
know. This is
let's.
okay. So here we go. Here's what I want to know. Are there unique challenges that members of the military might face when dealing with alcoholism? What do you think, Drew?
Well, I think everybody comes into AA with unique stories. It was, is every member of the military, do they have a unique story? Yeah, of course. But is it a particular challenge that prevents them from getting sober? No. And I think, there's the way we recover is the same. The 12 steps are the same for everyone. I don't need to go to a meeting with just other military folks in order to get sober. That being said, if you're deployed, it's tough. It's gonna be tough to get sober. There were no meetings when I was over in Iraq. I did find one in Kuwait, but now we live in an age where this was even pre pandemic, and I was doing Skype meetings with people in Yemen and Saudi Arabia. This is before Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all that. So there's a lot of resources now that allow folks when they're deployed in that environment to still stay connected. I was meeting with my sponsor every week and going through the big book. So do we have unique challenges? No, we recover all the same, but certainly unique stories when we get here.
What about you, Jay Wayne?
Well, when I was in the military, we were still using smoke signals
Little more current.
to talk. I can tell you that, I mean, I didn't, when I was in the military, I was not sober. I did get sober. I had been discharged about 6 weeks when I did get sober. Looking back on it, I certainly maybe could have recovered if I had been introduced to the solution through Alcoholics Anonymous earlier. But I was afraid to ask for help from the military. And looking back on it, some of that stuff was just my own fear and insecurity that we all carry with us. But I was afraid of them, doing a drug test on me, and finding out that I was using a little bit of cocaine. And back then, the military didn't have a drug problem. That's what they would say, although that. There were many of us, doing stuff. Now my drinking, I mean, I was alcoholic. I mean, drinking was my deal. I did a lot of other substances, but just the fear around that. And it looked to me like they were just locking people up. They gave Drew a choice, federal prison or help. It looked to me like they were just throwing people in the brig, best I could tell back in the 80s. So, I mean, I don't think there was anything unique other than I was just scared to ask for help. So, I mean, that would be about it.
So it sounds like that's a no.
That would be a no to the answer the question. I mean, but you know what? Everybody has, I mean, regardless of your circumstances, we all have challenges, and a lot of them are stuff just we make up in our head. Yeah.
So this next question, I think Drew kind of covered a little bit, but do experiences of military service impact someone's recovery from alcoholism?
Yeah, I don't think that it hinders one any more than, the person that comes in with a traumatic experience. They make for great stories, and the Grapevine puts out this publication where we can, I can read that and I can identify to some level. I am what they call a FOBIT. So it's that when you're deployed in that environment and you don't leave the base, you're called a it's a FOBIT. FOB is forward operating base, and I don't leave the base, so I stay on the base. I'm not the guy that's leaving and going getting shot at. I'm the guy that's getting the hot food, the hot shower, and then they come back and gripe about all the FOBITs that don't leave the wire. So my experience is different. We did get shot with, we did get take on rocket fire. I was over there in Iraq when General Soleimani was taken out with the drone, and we all thought, well, this is it. We got nothing to defend ourselves. And I experienced real fear over there. It's probably the most fear I've had in sobriety. But I had grateful to be sober at that time, and to be able to pull up WhatsApp and call my sponsor, and walk through that. And so, it's unique experiences. The cool thing today is that I'm with technology. You're never alone. I wound up in Kuwait en route to Iraq, and found there's a little pamphlet somewhere as a meeting, and met up with another alcoholic in a Starbucks over there in Kuwait, and had a meeting. So, I think sometimes special interest groups, especially with military, because I've been to a meeting on Fort Bragg's post, and it became a pissing contest of your experience, and it was less about the solution and how are we going to recover, and more about, well, I did this and I went through this experience, and this is how, and it's like, it gets twisted, and I have a kind of a salty taste in my mouth, because before I deployed, the night before, I went to that meeting that on that military installation, and I was thinking, man, this is strange. This is less about the solution and more about that pissing contest. So, I don't think that it hinders us from recovering.
Yeah, and if you listen to our traditions, right, it basically says that we should help anybody that wants to recover from alcoholism. And it was there to not exclude anyone and for us to be inclusive. And we've said it many times on previous podcasts. We help alcoholics, right? We don't help people in the military. We don't help ex-gang members. We don't help, ex-convicts or current convicts. We don't help men, women, children. We help alcoholics. And if you're all that other stuff, that's great. But, and I think some of what this points to is it points out people's differences, and it helps us to feel unique and different. And to me, that just feeds our selfishness and self-centeredness and our alcoholism. And people recover the same, and to segment people or to point people out, I don't know, it just seems like it's not consistent with spiritual principles.
Well, I kind of
And
relate it to like, I don't know, I kind of think of like when people get blue cards to go into the prison. And then all, and I've known these people for 10 years, and all of a sudden they go into a prison and they start talking different and acting real hard and telling stories that are just, and I'm just like, why are you doing like this is just an AA meeting that happens to be in a different location. So I could see, but an outsider's perspective, someone who doesn't have any history with any of that, are like, but did you hear what they said about their life and how they ended up here? And I could see how like military could be the same way, where people are just throwing stories back and forth, and all it takes is one outsider to hear that and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that y'all went through that, or it's so horrible. Let's write a pamphlet or a special book for you so you can recover, because it's so hard.
What's the next question, Shank?
Next question. What are some of the key factors that contribute to successful transition from active military to civilian life for recovered alcoholics?
Yeah, I think it's the same for everyone there. It's, when I left the military, or returned back from deployment, it was reconnecting with my home group. I was already in contact with my sponsor, and getting back into service. It is tough to have a service position in your home group while you're deployed for a while. But you know what? It's there when you get back, and it's the same for everyone. It's not, there's no alternate pathway. Because I was in the military, I got to go down this route, and I got to take these the alternative steps over here. I've got to get active. I've got to just do the things that I need to do to become to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and just carry the message that way.
So Drew, you got sober when you were in the military.
Correct.
Yeah. And how long were you in the military and a member of AA?
9 years, and so I got sober in 16 and left in 22. So about 6 years I was sober in the military.
Yep. And you, no problems with them thinking that you were, different or singling you out or not letting you have promotions or jobs because of that?
No, and I think it's almost to my benefit. I was fortunate that when I got sober, my chain of command had multiple personal experiences with sobriety, and gosh, I don't know. If I was in a different kind of training program, I may have seen the door a lot earlier. So I'm grateful that I was in the military when I got sober. Now they throw the kitchen sink at the issue. I had an addiction psychologist. I had a therapist. I had a
Sure.
psychiatrist. I had everything, and they also, they promote those to some degree, the smart recovery and the alternative pathways. And it gets muddy. It for a newcomer going through that route, there's too many options, in my opinion. But I'm grateful that no, it didn't affect any promotions and everything. I did have to repeat a year of training, which I was a little sore about at first. But I saw a guy at my home group, and he said, if you were, if I would appreciate it if you spent a little bit more time in your training program. And so I needed some help, and the military, at that time certainly gave it to me.
Yeah. And so when you got out, I mean, you didn't need anything special to transition into civilian life or nothing different from a recovery perspective.
No. I got out, and I did move to another state, and so I found a new home group. I got a service position at that home group, and just kept doing the deal, and far away from where I left the military.
Yeah. So basically, it boiled back down to what we all need. We need open-mindedness, and we need willingness. All right. If we're gonna make a transition from something into the program. So, yeah. So Shank, not much different than transitioning from prison. Yeah.
Or a treatment center,
Or
or
a treatment center.
outpatient, inpatient. Like, there were so many things that were similar to Drew that were required by the state that I live in for me to do for several years. I was sore about it. I was annoyed. I didn't want to have to do more outpatient or more inpatient or whatever. Like, I didn't want to be on parole. But Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in it who did not have the quote consequences that I did taught me how to show up and just live life and apply the principles of AA no matter where I was.
Yeah. It seems a lot of what times though, when we segment those people or those things that it basically like scares people, or they, you know, we make them think they're different. Oh, you need some special stuff because, you know, you just got out of IOP. I just need a book and go help somebody. It's really, I love the statement in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, thus we grow and so can you, though you be but one man with this book in your hand. We believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that. But you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. So I mean, obviously that's on page 162 and 163 in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I would say that's still accurate statement today. Right? I mean, if you're going to recover and help people, really all you need is a book and willingness.
Yep, I agree with that.
Pretty
I remember.
interesting that you were using technology prior to Zoom.
Well, I was getting ready to, that's where I was getting ready to say. So I remember I've Skyped with some other people, and me and Drew were doing WhatsApp. And this was before pre-pandemic. It wouldn't bother me if that word would just disappear, but
I knew
people
you
that
loved it when I said that.
there were but there were people that were like thinking that that's like, oh, you can't work the steps with people over Skype or WhatsApp or now I think there were a lot of people that thought it probably was cool and understood it, but there was a lot of people that, you know, didn't think that was adequate, I guess, would maybe be a way to put it. And then pandemic hits and everybody jumps on Zoom and talks about how great it is. I mean, it just cracks. It just cracks me up.
Yeah,
But you know,
I mean, I had a group that I was meeting with all, you know, every day, and I had a guy that asked me to sponsor him over Skype. You know, this is, and it's the same thing. Just start going through the book. It's not, it's really not that any not that different. And you know, technology today really allows us to help folks get sober everywhere.
yep. It really does. So this goes back to the question, should we have specialized meetings just for members of the military or veterans? Is it necessary,
No.
I guess, would be a better way to ask the question. So I had a last week, I got an email from a guy who heard a talk of mine on YouTube. He's like, hey, I really enjoyed your talk. And he says, this is what it said. I'm a member of a specialized group just for veterans. And we want you to come on and talk to to our group on Zoom. It's fine. So I paused before I responded and waited a few days and talked to a few people. And I started reflecting on some of the comments I've made publicly on the podcast. And I'm like, well, how can I actually talk to And you know what? I didn't do it. I actually replied back to him and explained to him that, hey, I appreciate the invite, and I actually honor a group's right to be autonomous and to conduct their meetings how they want to, but that I think that meetings like that just separate people, and they're actually not in the spirit of our traditions, and I declined the request. And it was difficult to write that. And to do that, I didn't, I mean, it just, it, I didn't just, I mean, I thought through it and prayed about it and talked to some people, but he hasn't replied. So if you're out there listening, send me a reply, my man.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. Yeah. I just feel more strongly about it than ever that it's just unnecessary. We recover the same regardless. So,
There's a
Shane, can we
group.
move
There's a
on?
group. Yeah, there's a group that meets down the road from here. It's a veterans group, and I still haven't been, and I'm sober today, so I guess, my home group is working.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, I mean, if they think they have to talk about things that they can't talk about in regular meetings, that's what sponsors and friends and trusted people in the program are for.
Well, also, like, what's that quote? We are people who normally would not mix. Did I mess it up? Or that's.
That's we're people, yeah, who normally would not mix or.
Well, if I'm in a group of people that have done all the same things I have, we're people that would mix. We would be together a lot. I just find it confusing.
It's a little confusing. Let's move on to meeting shrapnel.
Shrapnel.
What do you think?
All right, Drew, this is your second time on the podcast, right? So you've done some meeting shrapnel before. This is our segment of lore, myth, and sayings frequently heard in AA. So at the top of the episode, Jerry reminded us that we kept spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. So y'all quit playing like we never keep any shrapnel. I mean, we're on a roll. Keeping some shrapnel lately, okay?
That's right, 33%.
33%. So our first meeting shrapnel is give up the fight, pick up a white. Do you think about that, Drew?
I haven't heard that one before.
Okay, well, let me give you some context that you could probably figure out, but it's during the ceremony at the end of every AA meeting where they have these little trinkets and toys. For a white chip, people will say, give up the fight, pick up a white.
Does everybody cheer it and do like a is
They
there a is
do.
there a change? They didn't, yeah, that
Yeah, oh
makes
yeah.
sense.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm gonna scrap that one.
Drew went in quick on the
He
scrap, didn't he?
did. He sure did.
Give up the fight, pick up a white.
And then usually it is stated like white is the international sign of surrender.
That's right. Yeah, white is the international sign of surrender. Is that actually true? Somebody Google it real quick. It probably is.
It probably is.
Yeah. Well, so they're ref I think Shank already covered it, but they're referring to when they do the ch give out chips at meetings. Typically, the white chip is like for a beginner, or they'll call it a 24-hour chip. But in most places, I think it's white because white is the international sign of surrender. It's well, dumb to me, but I don't. Most people know my thoughts on chips, but.
Has there ever been a time where you liked chips?
Oh yeah, I loved them. Yes, I was a chip master, man.
A chipmunk.
Chip monk.
Oh, I heard that for the
I've
first
heard
time, Drew, like 2 weeks ago.
that. Yep. It's
All right,
popular here in Georgia.
the chipmunk. So that the so the chipmunk is the person that gives out the chips.
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
I texted Jerry and I said, chipmunk, and he's like, you've never heard that? And I was like, no, I just heard it for the first time.
Oh my goodness.
I've never liked chips,
Well, me either.
personally.
No,
Well,
me
I didn't
either.
like them when I was first getting sober because I didn't want anyone to know my name or look at me or come and say, "Oh my God, that's so great." I like attention, okay, but I don't like attention like that. And it was like really popular when I got sober. Maybe it still is, I don't know, but to go around to like 20 meetings that you've never been to and pick up your 30-day chip, show others that it works, pick up your
Show others
six,
it works.
which I was only able to pick up a 30-day chip, maybe 60 days before I went to prison. But when I got out, they had like this
Made up for it,
special
huh?
chip because I had gotten a year while I was in prison and it was a few months after or whatever. And they had this special chip made for me that was like, I don't know, 15 months or whatever it was. And I just remember being like, I hate this. I mean, I want to be special, okay, and all that other stuff, but it was not my favorite thing. I was like, this is kind of weird.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I've picked up some chips when I was newer, but I've never liked it actually. It's always, well, you proved one of my points. It's embarrassing. It kind of singles people out. And to me, the white chip or the beginner chip or 24-hour chip, wherever you're at, whatever you call it, the third
Clean.
the get you a clean white. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or pick up a took a nip, pick up a chip. You ever heard that one?
Had a slip, get a chip.
Get a chip. But to me, it's the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. So now we've in a lot of places it's implied that you got to pick up a white chip to join the program. It's just not true. And then you got the chronic relapser. I mean, the last thing that guy needs or gal needs is to get up and embarrass themselves again by
Well, I
picking up
kind
the
of
white
blew
chip.
up a friend group because, I mean, they're not like seriously mad about it, but because there is someone that I've known for years since I've been trying to get sober and she's been trying to get sober since before then. She's like, I don't want to pick up a white chip. And I'm like, then don't.
Yeah.
Then don't. And my
They'll
other girlfriends are like, she needs it's this humbling experience. And I'm like, she's been trying to get sober for 20 freaking years, man. Like,
Yeah.
I don't think
Yeah.
picking up that chip is helping her with humility, personally.
A chip's not gonna help you. How about take a step? How about pray? How about help somebody? I mean, and then the whole ceremony around it, you get some people, they're like expert chipmunks. They've got sayings and stories for every chip, every color, every increment of time. The judge said 90 days. If you haven't heard of that in a while, come get your 3-month chip.
The visitor chip, the brown
Oh yeah.
chip.
Oh
It
yeah.
goes on and on.
So silly. I'm
So
scrapping
silly.
it.
All
Doctor
right.
already scrapped it. What
He
about you?
scrapped it. I'm scrapping it. It's out of here.
Right.
All right, our meeting shrapnel number two is the $5,000 big book. Now, our guest from our first episode of this season, he mentioned it. Now, I believe, and Carmack, don't get mad at me, but I believe that if we adjust for inflation, it would be like a $15,000 big book. So, $5,000 big book a long time ago, maybe. What do you think about that one, Drew?
Wait, so it's you're saying it's 5,000 if we adjust for inflation?
Well, what I'm no, he said he got a $5,000 big book, which means he went to treatment for 30 days, and then they sent him to AA.
He paid for treatment for five. The treatment cost him 5,000, and when he was done, they basically gave him a big book and said, "Go to AA," which is true. That's what happens a lot. It used to happen a lot. So basically, the idea is, well, the big book cost me $5,000. I could have just gone to AA back then and paid $5 for the book and got the same treatment.
I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, the amount of money that was spent on me when I first got sober, as far as all of these fancy medical appointments and lots of IOP and gosh, so many blood and in urine tests. You know, there's a lot of money that was spent on me. So, I still have never felt the need to say that I got a $5,000 big book. But I certainly can relate to the concept, but still don't like it. Scrap it.
Drew, we might have to start calling Drew like the $200,000 man.
Yeah, maybe three, three or
Maybe three.
four.
Or half, maybe a half million. Let's
Yeah, he's
just
a half
put
milli.
he's half milli member. Oh, $5,000 big book.
You know what?
I kind of like it.
I never heard that until, I don't know, a few years, or maybe I had and I didn't understand it or didn't get it. But I went to a 30-day treatment. It was more than $5,000 11, 12 years ago. So there you go. But it's interesting. Like I did a lot of stuff. Like they did the Joe and or the Chalk Talks and the Father Martins and like all these different things. I learned what drugs did in the body. I learned that I should have been doing cocaine so I could drink more, drink longer, stay up to drink. But the reason why I'm still sober, like I don't try to pretend like I know if I would have drank in that 30 days or not. But the reason I'm still sober today is AA. And they kind of taught AA in a way at that treatment center. So I am glad that they called someone up in AA where I was going back to and had that woman pick me up and take me to a meeting and explain to me what AA is and what it is not. Because a lot of the stuff that they did in that treatment center was not AA. Thanks for the information.
But a lot of people that go there don't know that. They think it's kind of all the same. So you got a $12,000 big book.
Yeah, something like that.
That's what
And
you need to start saying
then
then.
you guys paid for a year of treatment.
We did.
And
Yep, through
then
our
probably I was in a 3-month specialized treatment in prison called the DART program. So
guys, you're
thank
ex
y'all. Thank y'all so much.
Shank, you're expensive. You might be a quarter mil.
Maybe.
Yeah, you might be a quarter milli.
I don't think that my room and board was as nice as Drew's, maybe.
Probably not.
Both of ours were paid by taxpayers, so thank you to all your the taxpayer listeners out there. Appreciate
Yes, that's a good point.
it.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You've got
Well,
that
I got.
impeccable coat of sand.
Well, I got a $5,000 big book, but I think you're right though, Shank. A lot of people don't know what it means when people say it. Yeah, I got one of those $50,000 big books.
Well, and also, this is going to sound so stupid, but I think one of the first times that I heard something like this, and this is controversial, but was when the manuscript thing was happening. And I remember just being like, that's it? $5,000? Like, I thought we were talking about a lot more money here with that manuscript. I was like, wait a minute.
Oh man, what? Yeah, let's don't get started on that.
I
Good
know.
Lord. How much were they going to pay for it?
A lot.
Half mil, something like that?
Something like
900,000?
that.
Yeah. Well,
Drew already scrapped it.
I'm scrapping it.
It's out of here.
right.
So our last meeting shrapnel for today is stick and stay. Have you ever heard that one,
Damn,
Drew?
Shank, you pulled some out of the vault, didn't you?
I did go into the archives just specifically for Drew.
Stick and stay. It sounds kind of gross. Sticky, and then just gets, I don't know, stuck in the in the meeting. I don't know. When do folks use it? Is that another chip
Okay,
ceremony race?
so the best that I can figure is this was almost a replacement or something new for at the end of the meeting when people would say like keep coming back. It works if you work it and you're worth it and you're worth it or whatever people say.
And
So
you
being
live it
able
every day, hey.
yeah and So I think it was kind of one of those things, instead of keep coming back, some people wanted to say something better, quote, better. So stick and stay. Like, you don't have to leave and go back out there and drink again.
Another fist pump phrase, stick and stay. Yeah. Keep it going. Yeah, I don't like it one bit. So I'm gonna scrap that one.
I don't know though. Hold on a second now. You just gave me a visual. I can picture this at a convention or maybe even at the home group. Stick and stay. Or do it during the chip ceremony when people get up to get that white chip.
Yep.
Which is the international sign of surrender.
When they give up the fight, pick up a white. After they've received their $5,000 big book.
Yes, it all ties together. We are on to something. Stick and stay. Yeah, I mean, what's something better to say than that? Keep coming back. Oh my goodness. Stick and stay. It had to have come out of a treatment center or NA.
I do wonder how some of this stuff gains traction.
Yeah.
Because as soon as we say it sometimes, or as soon as I hear it one time and I'm like, oh, let me put this on our list for the podcast, then I'll hear it 25 times in a week. Mm-hmm. Conjure it up.
Yep. We do conjure it up. Well, I think stick and stay needs to go back where it came from. So I'm scrapping it.
Dr. Drew already scrapped it. So I'm scrapping it as well. It's out of here.
All right. It's out of here. It is out of here. Hey, if you're out there and you're in the military or were in the military, know that we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But also remember that we all recover. If you're going to recover in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the same. Through the 12 steps, through a relationship with a power greater than yourself, and helping other people. And best we can tell, you can do that regardless of where you're at or what your circumstances are. So take those 12 steps and be free. Dr. Drew, we appreciate you coming on and being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you again. Be free.
Freedom.
Thanks for listening. If you have a comment, suggestion, or just need help, you can email Shank and Wayne at freedom@alcoholicsalive.com. Remember, we're recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but we do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do we get paid. Join us next week for another great episode.